This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on A People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2 and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests at toll-free USA, Canada, 888-429-5471. With me tonight, Dr. Robert Gould and Dr. Tim Takaro, both members of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. Great, Don. Thank you.
Great. Tonight's topic is a discussion about the enormous amount of dead civilian accumulation due to the offensive in the Middle East. The numbers are very high and staggering. The PSG organization is making light of this, and we're trying to wonder why it's not in the media. Can you explain to us why, Robert?
Well, I think it's in line with a number of themes that are picked up within the body count report itself, in the sense that there's been a real controversy, if you will, over what are the more minimal figures that have been reported traditionally by organizations such as Iraq Body Count in the UK, which used passive methods of interpreting the death toll in Iraq by utilizing morgue records, reports in the media, that type of stuff, which everyone knows is an undercount. But what this report Body Count does is compare those numbers with studies that have been done, including those one that Dr. Takaro can speak about, which is to take more active methods of really scraping beneath the surface to find out what the true toll of morbidity and mortality has been. And by a variety of sampling methods, we come up with figures that are anywhere from 5 to 10 times greater than what you pick up with the passive figures. And the import of this is that we know that so many people had to have perished because of things that didn't involve getting to the morgue to be reported dead. We're talking about death squads that were active throughout the region. We're talking about bombing raids that killed people without them being recorded as dying. We're talking about people who were driven out of the country, not counted, with family members who perished through all of the destabilization and violence that was in the region, as well as the indirect costs, which are based on the widespread destruction caused by the war that leads to ill health, bad water, all that type of thing. And the import of this is the fact that we, American, here in the United States, as well as in Canada, have really been insulated beyond the thousands of soldiers who perished or who were wounded and still bear the legacy, but many more people died in this area and also in Afghanistan and Pakistan, fueling the type of anger that really continues to perpetuate the type of violence that's going on in the region, and very important for us to reflect on when we're being asked to engage in even more interventions of the like in either continuing and increasing our role in Afghanistan, or with the current push to go to war against ISIS in Syria and Iraq.
Great. And Dr. Takaro, can you also shed some light or what your perception of it is?
Well, I certainly agree with everything that Dr. Gould said. I did want to note, Don, I am a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. But I'm a dual citizen now for the last 10 years. I'm also a member of the Canadian Physicians for Global Survival. That's the Canadian affiliate to the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, the Nobel Prize-winning organization that authored this report. I think the inconvenient numbers that the report describes are inconvenient, particularly for the large media companies, which have lots of defense contractor dollars floating around in their portfolio. And the civilian casualties are a part of the cost of war that these companies really would like the public to not know about or forget about. And so they do everything they can to make these numbers go away.
Right. Well, the only way we can make these numbers go away, I'm guessing, is to stop wars or stop the imbecilic movement of war for profit.
That would be good.
I think that's really right. And, you know, there are many ways that this violence is continuing on. It's and reflective of even how our country responded in the wake of the Vietnam War. If we're looking at the sort of, you know, surrogates that are operating on our behalf right now while we're contemplating committing more of our own troops, we have to look at, for example, how well-armed Saudi forces, I mean, this is the whole petrodollar for arms sales circuit that's been underscoring Middle Eastern oil economics and the whole geopolitical system thereof for more than 50 years. And we're stuffing the Saudis with arms as well as the Egyptians now that we've, you know, stopped our temporary halt to funding and providing arms for the Egyptian military to carry out similar underreported crimes against the Yemeni people. Witness the air campaign that the Saudis are launching with full collaboration, admitted in the New York Times and elsewhere, of U.S. military intelligence allowing these operations to proceed.
Well, let's also not forget the Palestinians that have been tortured by the Israelis for the past 60-some-odd years. You know, we've been paying for that through the nose also.
Right.
I'm really glad you bring that up, Don, because there is only one nuclear-armed nation in the Middle East that has been accused of war crimes, of course, and that is Israel.
Right, but nothing's being done about it. It shows the hypocrisy of our government and where their perception of humanity really lies.
And quite remarkable as well, I would add, Don, given that, you know, just in today or yesterday's paper, the Israeli government is offering, you know, their solutions to the Iranian compromise that's been reached, which would basically scuttle it. And again, showing the double standard versus here's Iran, who, you know, is a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And Israel, the nuclear armed power in the region, trying to dictate the terms of trying to cool down at least that point of friction in the Middle East and possibly provide a little more stability thereof.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me because it's not getting out to the American public due to the media being under control of the Zionist figureheads here in the United States that's stopping any of this logical information from getting out and keeping people dumbed down.
Well, you know, it's a contradictory thing. I think there's unity. I think there's certainly strong Zionist influences manifested by the American-Israeli Political Action Committee on U.S.-Iranian policy and Mideast policy. But, you know, I mean, those policies only get supported if they're in concert with overall U.S. foreign and military objectives, which are greater than Zionism. And of course, you know, as indicated earlier, what I was mentioning, span the relationships with the Saudi regime as well. So I think it's a rather complicated mix of, in this case, Israelis and Arabs in the region, who at both ends are well armed by our government and NATO allies, and overall make the world safe for oil, which of course, and speaking for our organization's concerns as well, is the very type of foreign policy that continues fossil fuels that are going to be killing us because of climate change.
Correct. I agree with everything you're saying. I have a question from an audience member. Mark in Tennessee wants to know what the doctors, or can the doctors give some details as to how you came up with the figure of over 1 million deaths in the Middle East, and do you think it's over 2 million or higher?
Yeah, if it's okay, I'll take that one, Don. This is Dr. Takaro.
And this is Rock. So, I'm sorry. Don is the sound engineer. This is Rock Cash.
Oh, it's Rock Cash. I'm so sorry. thanks okay. for that. So the number is a very round number, that 1 million. And the report goes into some detail about how the number was arrived at. And it is a compilation of different studies. You can look at any one individual study, the most recent one being the PLOS Medicine study authored by first author was Amy Hagopian at the University of Washington. The number is got a what we call a confidence interval in epidemiology, meaning that the number could be as low as in the 650,000 range, or as high, I think, as the caller suggests, in the 2 million range. There are many factors that go into the uncertainty, but as Dr. Gould was explaining, the numbers come from house-to-house survey data, the most reliable numbers, and those are very well accounting for the different biases, but they still have a large uncertainty in the range that I just described.
Okay. Another question from Frank in Missouri. He wants to know if you think that the catalyst for all of this killing and destruction, 9/11, was in fact another long line of proven false flag attacks.
Perhaps Dr. Gould wants to take that one.
Well, I mean, maybe not. Again, I think it's very complicated, and certainly we have a history, as do other countries, of encouraging false flag attacks to be able to enter into warfare. So it's certainly plausible, but, there are other writers about this and experts who can pinpoint, say, the success of the 9/11 action as being, at the time, reflective of intelligence capabilities that were overloaded. So, for example, George Friedman, who writes for the organization Stratfor, had a little book on this, and it's known that Bin Laden, for example, who, from his own connections with American military dating from Afghanistan, et cetera, and military intelligence, understood both the capabilities and the weaknesses of the American intelligence collecting system at that time. Obviously, as Edward Snowden has revealed, we've improved our capabilities to process information. But at least at the time, Bin Laden, knowing those weaknesses, felt confident, and he documented, actually placed a call to his mother the night before the events, and with the confidence that there was no real-time ability to sift through all that data and things could proceed. So all sorts of things can be happening. I think our history is full of many conspiracies that may or may not be borne out by more information. But I think we really should focus, instead of that, on the larger dynamics of U.S. foreign and military policy and our geopolitical work, particularly within the Middle East, over the last half century, these policies, with all of their contradictions, are much deeper and much more formative in what we do, I think, than the conspiracies that exist within it. And I think there's really more of what we have to look at. Again, why are we doing all this stuff to protect the very fossil fuels that are going to kill us? And who makes those decisions and why? And, you know, within that, there's a lot of fault lines of siding with one group, then another, et cetera, just like we did in terms of playing off Iran and Iraq during the 1980s.
Right. Reggie in Maryland wants to know, do you think that the U.S. government actually prefers third world nations that have a lot of natural resources to be in a state of chaos?
I think that's a very interesting question that the caller put there. this is Dr. Takaro again. It's certainly within the history of the United States to be taking advantage of weakened countries with resources that the United States desires. And again, as Dr. Gould pointed out, our addiction to fossil fuels means that we really will stop at nothing to secure the energy that the system requires.
Yeah, and I would also add, this is Bob, you know, and that could take many forms depending on the situation, because, you know, the chaos that exists also will impede, as for example in Libya after Gaddafi was overthrown, the actual pumping of the oil if you want it, because that type of destabilization makes it difficult to get oil. On the other hand, we promote quote-unquote stable regimes, as is in post-revolutionary Angola in Africa, that continues to lubricate us with oil that is bought with a great deal of corruption with stable regimes. And, you know, that permit the oil. Those stable regimes at the same time are built upon incredible impoverishment and brutal conditions of work for most of the people in those countries. It's been well known and documented that having access for countries to riches such as oil and other fossil fuels tends not to lift those countries up, even when they have stable, albeit generally corrupt, regimes. So, again, the form that that type of exploitation that takes place in the global system, the rule of those over the few that we see everywhere, including our own country in terms of the polarization of rich and poor, I think those are the relationships that continue this type of economy. And there are many ways that that could be achieved by those who rule at this point.
Great. I've got another question from Mike in California. He's pleased that Dr. Takaro and Dr. Gould are physicians with a conscience. What is their opinion on the estimation and the percent of physicians in Canada and USA who are also outspoken, or are they a small minority?
Well, this is Dr. Takaro. I'll take that one. Okay. But Dr. Gould should certainly add. I think most people understand that the physicians are a very conservative group overall. And that doesn't mean that they're not the usual distribution of left and right. But I would say it's shifted to the right in physicians, in part because many are protecting a very high income, and the Republican Party or the Conservative Party in Canada protects the rich better than the more socially oriented parties to the left. So, you know, despite the fact that the physicians overall are generally conservative. There are many, many, and I would put this in the thousands of physicians in North America and many, many more in Europe, where we should not forget this report, Body Count, originated in the IPPNW chapter in Germany. There are many, many physicians with conscience about the plight of disadvantaged people in the world and also about the plight of the planet with regards to huge environmental change that we're facing.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that because I completely agree with Dr. Takaro in his assessment of, you know, what's the social class that most physicians either certainly are in when they're practicing in terms of their income. And, you know, where most historically, where most physicians have come from in terms of their social class. You know, I grew up in the Gun Hill Project, so I wasn't, you know, burdened with that. But nonetheless, you know, once one attains the sort of income and class privilege that many physicians have, that's something that can condition a type of conservatism. But the other side of it is, that I would say, and something that I think those of us who are, you know, have worked our lives within a more progressive physician community, whether that embraces Physicians for Social Responsibility, International Physicians Prevention Nuclear War, Physicians for Human Rights, Physicians for National Health Program in our country. That represents a much more progressive trend that it's important for us who come out of that perspective to recognize that many of our colleagues, as limited as they may be in their attitudes because of where they come from or their training or the privilege that comes to them once they become physicians, that there is a core within them that they are practicing, hopefully, healthcare, care for their patients, that sort of thing, even on the individual level. And it's trying to pick up on that, that's a core in people that I think is a challenge and an opportunity for us who are working on these issues to tap into the best of people and motivate them. So I have to say, you know, as part of my work within Physicians for Social Responsibility, I've worked for many years with my local medical society, Santa Clara County Medical Association and the California Medical Association. And if you appeal to people's health and hopefully the sense of public health that they have, we've been able to get the same conservative physicians to support policies that call for abolition of nuclear weapons, to call for dealing with climate change, to reduce the use of pesticides, to take a progressive attitude on reducing the dangers of chemical pollution, because we've made them health issues in our approach to them. And this has led to the point that we all know the American Medical Association is very conservative, but the work that PSR chapters, for example, did in California, Washington, Oregon, and Illinois in moving these types of initiatives and outreach to physicians, the AMA in 2008 issued a policy statement supporting strong measures on climate change. In their statement, they said it was the responsibility of physicians to talk to their colleagues about these issues and educate them, which has opened up our ability to talk to physicians within hospitals, to have institutional changes to reduce energy, et cetera, et cetera. So not taking anything away from the sort of baseline that we're dealing with among our colleagues in terms of the training and, you know, the sort of worldview that people have. But there is opportunity there, and we need to be sensitive to it and thoughtful in convincing our colleagues to support these types of important initiatives.
That's, you know, from your mouth to God's ears. Hopefully this will get done. Another question from Susan in Oklahoma. With the United States bombing in Iraq again, what can we do to stop the continuing deaths from being added to this body count in the Middle East? That's a repeat question. Sorry, but go ahead, Doctor.
I think it's worth repeating if it is a repeat question.
It sounds like a repeat question.
But it's very, very important question because there's a chance and unfortunately a large chance that people will feel disempowered because of the scale of the military-industrial complex in the United States and Canada. But, you know, we have to continue to hope that there is some democratic components still to our system. And it's there that public opinion really does make a difference. The fact that this report, Body Count, received virtually no mainline press, even though it was released on the 12th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, or I should say the second U.S. invasion. Yeah, even though that is the case, we have gotten a lot of good media like this show, for example, and people are understanding about these costs of war, the human costs, and they can speak out, whether it be writing to their congresspeople, whether it be writing letters to the editor, whether it be just talking to your friends, at raising the issue of the human cost of war is something that we must be relentless about, because that's the only way we'll make a difference.
Well, it seems that every time, now this is my notion and my feelings, every time I've written a senator or a congressman, I feel like it fell on deaf ears. It doesn't seem like they have any notion to do what the people want, and they're just continuing to do what the people that grease their pockets want them to do.
No, I mean, I totally get that, but the way to work that, I think, is, okay, you write your senator or your congressperson, and then you post it on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, whatever, Twitter, whatever, and you do your own media, and you just put the letter out there. And it's people will run with stuff if they believe in it. And yeah, the congressmen themselves, they're kind of fruitless, but it is still part of the process. And I think it helps if you write these letters and then publicize them in your own way.
Great. Well, we're going to take a short break. This is Rock Cash coming at you live with the People Speak Radio on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with our guest, Dr. Gould and Dr. Takaro, Physicians for Social Responsibility.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge bringing humanity closer to truth.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak, coming at you live on the BBS Radio Network. This is Rock Cash with my guests, Dr. Tim DeCaro and Dr. Robert Gould, Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're discussing the death toll amounts in Iraq, Pakistan, and Afghanistan due to U.S. bombing. Doctors, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Okay, Dr. DeCaro, since you don't want to go the other route, how about what's your opinion on, you know, the medications that are producing so many side effects and really not helping people, and a lot of them being neurotoxins? Would you happen to know anything about that as far as these social
things? I am a toxicologist. So I know something about medication and how they work. But I would appreciate if we could return to the report, because I think we have only scratched the surface. For example, okay. We haven't really talked about Pakistan and Afghanistan at all.
Okay, well, I have a couple more questions from people, and then we'll continue with that. And these are questions coming in along the same line that we were discussing in the first place. Okay, I've got Mike in Liverpool, and he wants to know if you think that Israel will ever be held responsible for using weapons of mass destruction such as white phosphorus and depleted uranium against civilians.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to take that, Dr. Gould?
So I don't myself know, so that's my ignorance about the use of depleted uranium by Israeli forces against civilians, although we within Physicians for Social Responsibility and our international organization, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, are for the banning of the use of depleted uranium and doing all that we can to get accountability about the dispersal so far to protect populations that have been exposed and to do the sort of studies that we need to find out what that real toll is. So I'm just ignorant of the allegation of Israeli use, but I would say anybody using this known radiological and heavy metal toxin should be held accountable for doing that when they do it.
I agree. Even us here in the United States or anywhere else. I know we've used some on Iraq and other places, and it's completely out of line. Being a former military personnel, I don't believe in – actually, I don't believe in war anymore.
Yep. If I could just make a comment about that the possibility here, I'm kind of with Dr. Gould on this one in the sense that I don't know exactly what Israel has done, but I do know that many of the armor-piercing shells that are used in tank warfare, for example, are depleted uranium weapons. So it would not surprise me in the least that during the invasion of Gaza, for example, when armor-piercing shells were used, that they contained depleted uranium. I would be very interested to learn more about this, and I'd appreciate it if the caller would send the information through you, Rocky Shandu, let us understand better what this is.
Yeah,
with that. Definitely. We'll pass it along. Lucy in Iowa wants to know more about this body count and where they can find out more about it. And Physicians for Social Responsibility, how did they win the Nobel Peace Prize? Well, you can go to www.psr.org for Physicians of Social Responsibility. And Dr. Gould or Dr. Takara, maybe you guys can fill us in on how you won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Sure. We probably many people on the radio remember the very dangerous times we had during the Reagan administration and the consequent polarization between the United States and then the Soviet Union with all of these nuclear deployments that continue to put the world in danger. I mean, we're not out of that, but at a time when previously to the Ukraine situation, say, there was very heightened tensions. Within Physicians for Social Responsibility, which dated back to the 1960s at the time when we still were having above-the-ground nuclear testing with all of the consequent health impacts from fallout, we joined with our international affiliates during the early 1980s in making this an international movement with a particular central focus on engaging then-Soviet physicians to be able to utilize the health voice to be able to convince our respective governments to get off the course of what would be fatal for the Earth thermonuclear war. And it's because of these efforts, which included the personal physician to Leonid Brezhnev, Yevgeny Chazov, who was his cardiologist, and at our own end, one of the founders of Physicians for Social Responsibility and International Physicians for Prevention of Nuclear War, Bernard Lown, were key figures in the sort of citizen doctor diplomacy that underlay these efforts. And because of this, this is the reason we were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985.
Awesome. Sorry, you're listening live to Rock Ash on the People Speak Radio Network here on BBS Radio Network with my guests, Dr. Robert Gould and Dr. Tim Takaro with Physicians for Social Responsibility. Doctors, when do you think we can stop all of this insanity and stop all of these war crimes for going on. We know that there's war crimes going on all over, whether it's done by any one of the countries that's out there relentlessly killing people for no reason, because the civilians have done nothing to anybody, and these people are being massacred and killed. How can we stop that? We really want to put an end to this, and it doesn't seem like anybody is listening.
Now, this is Dr. Takaro. If I could take a stab at that.
Absolutely, Doctor.
So the whole notion of collecting this data about the human cost of war is so that as the chicken hawks, people like Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and such, when these chicken hawks are planning their next war, they need to be held accountable, first for the deaths that they've already caused, but also they should be subjected to projections of death that may happen if they succeed in perpetuating another war. So the human cost of war should be added to all the other costs of war. And then when governing bodies decide we're going to go to war, they have to say, and we accept that there will be this many million people killed because of our decision. A good percentage of them, of course, will be innocent people. So if they were held accountable for this projection, then possibly the world would turn against the warmongers.
Right, but we've tried to hold them accountable. As a matter of fact, Vincent Bugliosi had gone to the Congress and tried to have George Bush put under arrest for murder because he lied to the American public about the war and the weapons of mass destruction and so on and so on. But it doesn't seem that, you know, Congress even wants to listen to what the people want. So, you know, it's a no-win situation as far as I can see. And
go ahead,
Dr. Gold.
Well, what I was going to add, I mean, I think all of us would agree with the difficulties we have in our current political system, being able to move that forward and establish that accountability. So I think we need to approach it on many different levels. So let me given that we do have this issue in our own political system, there are movements that are occurring internationally that offer some hope for raising awareness around the globe. And to that degree, if we could develop a counter global power to the nuclear weapon states, for example, we might be able to leverage some more change or raise the questions of where we should be putting our resources instead of weapons of war and more destruction and actually dealing with the problems we have. So one example I would say that is an indication of a different potential way to go is work that we're now doing within International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War as part of our project, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And nuclear weapons are not just this thing that we were dealing with in the 1980s, and now it's, you know, with the exception of Iran, it's sort of in the background. But the matter of fact is a lot of the violence and a lot of the capability to continue to wage warfare and not be challenged on the part of our country, its allies, and for that matter, the Russia and its allied states and what's going on in the Ukraine, for example, is predicated very clearly on the fact that particularly the nuclear weapons states, U.S., Russia, China, France, and England, possess nuclear weapons that, in the words of many of those who founded the U.S. national security state in the late 1940s, recognized that nuclear weapons were the ultimate lever of violence in what we have as a core principle of military policy, have a policy known as Paul Nitze enunciated in the late 40s of escalation dominance. So at every level of violence, you have the upper hand. So one way of reversing these trends is this movement that we now have and that PSR and IPPNW and Physicians for Global Survival are all on board on, is to work with the non-nuclear weapon states and what is a humanitarian impacts campaign. And this has had a lot of traction with many countries, now about 140 or so, who have signed on to a desire to ban nuclear weapons. And this is extremely important that now we're heading into the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Every 5 years, this goes on at the United Nations, and every 5 years, the nuclear weapons states dawdle and give all the excuses they can to not give up their nuclear weapons. But to the degree that we're getting traction in most of the countries of the world and their diplomats and building a global movement, this is the sort of thing, and it may well be insufficient for our needs. I'm not trying to dress it up any more than it is, but it represents a potential of having the rest of the world weigh in on the continued war crimes that go on throughout global militarism, global arms sales, and the continued banking by the major powers in our globe on nuclear weapons as a way to exercise that type of dominance. So I would suggest that's one very exciting international movement that's going on, because we now have the information, and you can go on our website and check it, that it isn't just the exchange of, you know, hundreds of thousands of hydrogen bombs like in the 80s when we, you know, grew up as an organization that threatens the world. But even over there, even meaning like places like South Asia, it's been estimated now by prominent scientists that even a small exchange of nuclear weapons, say in South Asia, would not only kill 20 million people from the expected consequences of heat blast and radiation, but the amount of incinerating cities that would result from even a local exchange would block enough sunlight. I mean, we're talking contrails here. We're talking about soot and burnt cities blocking out sunlight, that our estimation that the consequences of that global cooling and reduction of sunlight can plunge the world into a degree of malnutrition that can cause anywhere from 1 billion to 2 billion deaths. And so those are the stakes for us. I'm certainly not offering that as a solution to global warming, that we fire off a lot of nuclear weapons, right? I mean, that's obviously absurd. But what I am trying to illustrate is that we have other ways of going. If you're having the blockade, for example, here in the United States, we have a global community that's much more active. And we see them resisting in places like Greece and Spain as well, in terms of the domination of global capital, in terms of what's going on in the Western world.
Great. My question to Dr. Takaro, we don't have a war going on in Pakistan. Why is there a high body count there?
Well, we certainly do have a war going on in Pakistan. The Obama administration has been perpetrating a war in Pakistan ever since it came in.
Okay.
It's mostly in, of course, the tribal zone, so-called tribal zone, along the border with Afghanistan.
Right. So they're attacking Pakistan along with the Pakistanis, I guess, against the Taliban, and there's high counts from drone attacks.
Right.
That's right. The drone war is the most rapidly expanding part of the U.S. military operations all around the world. There is extensive combat in Yemen, for example. There's the ongoing strikes in Pakistan. The truth of it is, of course, I don't know where all of the drone attacks are these days. These attacks have been documented, and
certainly not being used against ISIS. Otherwise, we would have been rid of ISIS already. No.
Well, the truth of it is, they're not that effective. In terms of large-scale battle, scale warfare, they're very effective as tools of assassination. But the larger scale, they haven't really proven effective.
Right. Cheryl in Pennsylvania wants to know how many countries did the United States government has wars going on in?
That's a great question.
Not
do you have Is there a count below the entire world?
Well, you know, we can go through them. I would say that the capability for expanding that at any time lies in the fact that our military apparatus, and let's remember how many hundreds of billions of dollars we spend every year on the military, A, and B, what Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Vilmes illustrated in the $3 trillion war in terms of their estimate, later up to about $4 trillion in terms of what the cost of war provide us. All of this is undergirded by a massive infrastructure around the world with bases in most of the world's countries that subserve our interests. So, you know, that comes at a hefty price to our social fabric, considering that, you know, there are no jobs for folks far younger than I in this economy. We're cutting, basic social welfare programs, threatening Social Security. But the apparatus to continue that global warfare continues to be built up, as reflected by the latest budget proposals coming out of the Republican Congress to keep that going. I mean, even the previous attempts to, you know, taper back on the military in terms of the sequestration of the budget, you're going to cut equally from both sides. It was always bogus because they were going to take much more from the needs of real people, working people in our country. But right now, the spigots have been opened up. Anything is justified to give that money. And a little postscript on the Pakistani situation as well, just to share that with the listeners. Just the other day, I was noticing that they're trying to get Pakistanis to join the Saudis and the Egyptian component is in Yemen as well, to be able to fight there. So those will be additional deaths beyond Pakistan itself as well.
Right. Well, not to mention that Syria and all the other nations that are in turmoil due to our involvement there.
Right.
Well, I pray this all ends in a peaceful manner, but unfortunately, we do have some evil people out there to contend with and try to take down. I'm guessing that the best way to stop it is to defund it. And how can we go about that?
Well, I mean, you know, my own opinion is, I'm interested in what Tim thinks, this is Bob Gould, is that, you know, the insulation is not only, again, against the all the deaths that are done in our name abroad, but, you know, a real key to all of this is, when will the American people draw the connection between their plunging, you know, living standards in this country? And there's plenty of evidence of that. I don't need to go through the details, and the fact that we're spending so much on the military to keep this stuff going. I mean, you know, this is an age-old thing. You know, we, as part of our work in PSR, Physicians for Global Survival, are always trying to make the connections with people, because, you know, a lot of these issues are abstract unless you can literally make the connection. Like, you're not getting these schools, you're not having this food in your area, you're not getting what you need on a whole host of factors because we're stuffing the military and continuing these operations. So I don't have an easy answer, right? You know, how do you bring these issues back home and have people move in the right direction on it, as opposed to getting whipped up in the typical patriotic fervor? I mean, prior to the push to get us to, you know, have an authorization of war in Syria and Iraq, most polls showed that most Americans were opposed to continuing these conflicts, which then underscore why we move towards drone warfare, having other countries do it, et cetera. But the minute, you know, people start saying, you know, especially invoking the fear of the other, which is always the terrorist, not what we do, people get manipulated to start supporting these actions, as the poll numbers show as well. So it's a real challenge for us, and which is why, of course, we appreciate being on your show, because try to get these issues out to people when there's such a media blackout on making connections like this.
Yeah, I'd like to give a concrete example, if I could. I know we have a little time left here, but
by all means, go ahead, Doctor.
So the Canadian Parliament recently considered extending Canada's mission in Iraq and expanding the mission to Syria. So this includes ground troops that are supposedly advisors, but they get shot and killed, and aerial bombing. So the Canadian Parliament considered the extension of the mission and expansion, and they did not consider, as far as I can tell, for one moment, any of the material that we sent them with regards to the human toll of the war so far. So here is a democratic country arguing about whether they're going to extend and expand the killing, and it is all about, well, only ISIL members or ISIS members die, only Assad forces die, no civilians die, and we're just not going to talk about any of the numbers that have been documented in this report.
Right, they're not going to show all the innocent civilians that are dying just because they want a regime change in Syria. We're not going to show those people that are dying. We're not going to show people in Yarmouk that are caught in the middle between the Syrian forces and the ISIS members. But my big question is, I don't understand why ISIS, that is supposedly Islamic and everything else, is out there killing other Muslims and has not attacked Israel once. It just doesn't, you know, fill my mind with anything sensible. But anyways, thank you, doctors, for being on the show. We're running out of time. We'll have you guys back. Anytime you guys want to come back, just let us know. We'll have you on, and whatever you need to put out at the time, you're more than welcome to come back, because we have nothing but truth, you know, going over the air at this station. We are the people, and we are speaking. So thank you very much, Dr. Takaro and Dr. Gould. And everybody can go to www.psr.org to find out more about these doctors with a social conscience.
Thank you,
Rakeshan.
You're very welcome. And don't forget to join me next week here on The People Speak. And my guest will be Brandon Bryant. He's a former drone operator that speaks out against the U.S. military drone program right here at The People Speak. See you next week.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.